We're grateful just to be a part of this with you guys. And we're grateful for connections. People like Jeremy, we talked to a little bit last night, and just the power of what it means to know who we are in Jesus. Isn't that awesome? Mm-hmm. Who we are is who he says we are. It's who he says we are. I am who he says I am. That's who I am. I am who he says he am. Wait. Sam, I am. I am who he says I am. And there's nothing that changes that. I didn't know Jesus growing up. And my dad was a cop. And y'all work with cops, don't you? They do the same things oftentimes that you all do. And my dad would come home and he would tell me stories. And I would sit and listen like this, like, oh, what happened? And he said, he shot himself. And I said, and you were there? And he said, Chris, you know, he didn't really want to talk to us kids, but we just kept pestering. Five brothers, man, and we're all sitting there on the edge of our seat as he was telling stories of seeing people do things that shouldn't be done and seeing somebody as a cop who couldn't help. And I would say, Dad, I'm going to do that. And he says, Chris, there's only one thing I will never let you do, grow up to be a cop. And the second one is a firefighter. I said, how about a paramedic, Dad? Nope. That's the same thing. Isn't that the same thing anymore? All y'all paramedics? Anybody, are y'all firefighters and paramedics, slash, most of y'all? Let me see if you're slash firefighter, paramedic. Can I see your hands? Or you're married to one. Let me see your hands that way. Man, you all are awesome. So I told my dad, I got to do something, man. I had this tendency to want to run to things. And so I decided to go into psychology to study my dad and figure out what happened to the man. You know, why did he leave us? In the seventh grade, why did he leave five boys at home with no money? Nothing. Man, I grew up poorer than you guys can imagine, with nothing, nothing, nothing. He didn't abandon us because he didn't want to be with us. I just think it was trauma. It was hard. He didn't know what to do. Man, we had nothing. So all that to say, I decided I got to get into something. I went to school. I was the first kid in my family to go to school, and I decided I'm going to go study this thing, psychology. And then all of a sudden, I started finding myself. My dad, we reconnected, lived with him, moved to Vegas. He did security in Vegas. And then he went and worked on a maximum security prison. He spent time in prison. I'll go into that maybe later. How's that? A cop. Can you imagine that? My dad in prison because of things that went on that, well, it wasn't all that bad, but he was a year there, and that's when he left us. And I didn't really know that, but all that to say, I don't even know why I'm going off on this, but to say that our identity, he is that walks with Jesus. He is somebody that loves and knows what it means to be loved. So that he, she, when we do this, there's something deep and powerful. And so I met Jesus and learned about him. And I'm just going to say, so I ran to things and became a psychologist. And guess where I worked? With the maximum security ward, maximum security, with the criminally insane. I just give y'all, you know how long it took me to realize that I didn't want to work with the criminally insane on maximum security ward? It took me about 10 minutes. I walked in there and I go, oh, dear God. The door slammed behind me, the one. I go up to the next guard, yep, come on in. That one closed, the next one. You know all those guys you pick up on a 5150? That's where they go. Do you guys use a 5150 or is that police language?
Yeah.
You know what it is. So, man, all these guys are there, and I'm going, it took me literally 10 minutes to go, dear God, get me out, I'll never do this again. I stayed there and worked for a while, and then guess what we did? We ran a home for the criminally insane, but
well, it felt like it at times. They were troubled teens.
I'm sorry, so we ran a home for runaway kids, And we did that for a year in order to make, you know, and we were a Biola teaching there because they didn't pay so much. We ran this home for a whole year. They would, you all would drop kids off on us, and we'd hang out with these 8 kids in this home. And I worked with emotionally disturbed kids in a home. And I think it was because we would run to things. And so here's what paramedics do. Paramedics, y'all run to what? You go to where the problem is and you protect fire, or you protect you protect structures and you protect people. You're paramedics and you run to that. We're kind of like paramentals. We run to people with problems. And they come to us. And so I think in para-relationship kinds of things, that's who comes to us all of the time. Broken people, messed up people, hurting people. And it's hard. And I understand why my dad told me don't get into this. So, all that to say, to hear what we're doing up here, that you can come up here and worship Jesus and learn who you are in Jesus and what it means to walk with him and to know him. Man, I'm telling you, there's no better thing than that. We're going to talk about conflict today. So, by the way, being a paramental guy at Biola University, y'all ever been to Biola? Let me see your hands up, y'all. Oh, wow. Look at y'all. Been there. There's a big old mural of Jesus printed by Kent Twitchell. Huge mural right there, right in the middle of campus. How many of you remember seeing that Kent Twitchell mural of Jesus? Of course, that's awesome. So anyway, it's summer, and one day I'm sitting there, and because I'm kind of one of these, you know, paramental, pararelational guys, they call me up all the time when they're like bored or something. I don't know. I'm sitting on campus, and I go like this. It's summer, and it's pretty quiet, and I see some conferences going on and some people walking in, but there's a guy walking up who is clearly messed up. He's talking to himself, and the way I knew it was because there was a bang, bang on the side of my office. And I heard this banging, and I look out, and there's a guy just arguing to himself, and he's freaking people out. And so I go out there, and I see him, and I see the conferees kind of backing away from the guy, and I go up to him, and I watch him, and I see him walk around a corner and head up to our library. So I call up campus safety, I'm pleased, and I say, hey, y'all, there's a guy who walked in. I described what he was doing, and he walked into the library. And they go, hey, thanks, Dr. Reyes. And so they go over there. About 10 minutes later, they call me up. Hey, do you mind coming over here and talking to this guy? And I go, yeah, sure, whatever, I'll go talk to him. So I come over there, and so they bring him up to me, and they say, I ask him, I said, what you doing here, and how you doing? And I talked to him for maybe about 5-10 minutes, did a quick assessment, like some of y'all know what that's like, and I kind of assess the situation, and I'm talking to him, you know, and the campus safety sitting there, and about, I don't know, 10 minutes later, I call him over, I said, he's fine. In my opinion, he's fine. He talks to himself. You know, if you don't want him here, you can, you know, ask him off campus because it's private and you can do whatever y'all want, but he's not a student. He's just a guy that's having some thoughts and he's not quite sure where he is, but he's fine. Okay, so they say, oh, hey, thanks, that's awesome. So they take the guy and they just kind of start talking to him, and I leave and I go back to my office. And is this too long of a story?
Better pick it up.
Well, I'm going to close in prayer as soon as I finish this. But here's the story. So she says, pick it up. Okay, so I go back to my office, and I'm walking back there, and I think, oh, I saw this guy. I remember this guy getting out of a, oh, I remember seeing him at lunch getting out of a car. I know the car. So I walk over to the car in the parking lot. And I look in the car, and in the car, in the front seat, is a pistol. And in the back seat are three of the 6-gallon gasoline cans. And I see liquid in them. And now I'm thinking, you're an idiot. I just told these guys he's fine. Could you imagine that? Are you a paramental or are you just mental? What's wrong with you? So what do you think I did? What would you do? I went home, at least. What did I? No, I didn't. I ain't going to get blown up by nobody. No, not really. I ran up to the they're walking him out, you know, and they're kind of walking by him. I call, hey, come over here. And I told him what I saw, and he goes, oh. And by that time, he's right there in front of the Jesus mural, and this guy went and just tackled him right in front of the mural, man, laid him out, detained him, grabbed him, and hold him, and picked him up. He goes, is that your car? They took him over there. Is that your car? And he's like, Yeah. Oh my God. They're all like freaking out. They're looking at me like, who are you? He's safe. What's wrong with you? And so I go, oh my gosh, what did I do? What did I do? I messed up. But I kept thinking, no, something's wrong. Something's wrong. Something's wrong. So we sat there and I talked to them. We called, you know, sheriff and bomb squad. They're all out there. When it came out, I thought, nah, there's something messed up here. So here's the short end of the story, because my wife is kicking me under the table. And it goes like this. It was a pellet gun. And in the cans, in the gas cans, was his urine. That's where he was peeing. Because he was afraid people were out to steal his urine. And he was protecting it. We called his dad, and he drove him home that day. So I was right. That's the whole point of this story. I know what I saw, and I knew what I was doing when it came to conflict. We run to conflict. That was way, way too long. I'm sorry. But anyway, listen, you all run to conflict. We run to mental things. I don't know what, that's all I had to say. So, conflict in relationships. Lisa, she, please stop. Conflict in relationships. So if you struggle with trauma and pain, like my dad did, he turned to other people, and he eventually turned to alcohol, eventually got himself in prison. And he never did turn to Jesus. I shared the gospel with that man all the time. Dad, can I tell you about Jesus? He goes, I know you're God. If you're in trauma and your relationship suffers, this is what you need to listen to today. Does that sound good? This is what you need to listen to, because conflict in relationships stinks. It's messed up. Lisa, there are some powerful passages for us.
Yeah, let's take a look at these. Psalm 133:1. How good and how pleasant it is when God's people live together in unity. And then in 1 Corinthians, it says, I appeal to you, brothers and sisters, in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, that all of you agree with one another in what you say, and that there be no divisions among you, but that you be perfectly united in mind and thought. Wow, that's a high ideal, isn't it? I don't know about you, but Chris and I don't measure up to that every day. We don't measure up to that most days.
Are you really going to go there?
No.
Are you going to tell him? Go ahead and tell him.
But what we want to talk about today are some biblical principles, some relevant research, and practical applications that we put in place that have helped us. And we've been married going on 34 years. 34 years. And I'm telling you, the first 15 were really rocky. Really, really rocky. We really struggled. But we learned some of these principles today and allowed the Lord to do the work in our hearts. And it changed everything. And so we want to share some of that with you today, because we are nobody special. We're no big deal. And if the Lord did it for us, guess what? He'll do it for you too. Yeah. There's a beautiful psalm that says, faithfulness is his very character. And if he did it for us, he wants to, longs to, delights to do it for you too. So let's get into it today.
Yeah, by the way, who was the first man, really ultimate paramedic out there? I was first recorded in history as Jesus. You guys want a model for paramedics? You go to Jesus. I know you know that, right? Why was he the ultimate model? Who did he run to the good and to the people who were doing just fine? He said, no, that's not who I'm going to. I'm going to those that are sick and those that need help. And he cured those with illnesses and leprosy, and he went right into the middle of where it was messed up. Just because he went to people in need like you guys do. He went to people in need, and he said, that's who needs me. You talk about an amazing model for us. That's it, right? So knowing the hidden issues, though, is what makes conflict so difficult. So here's what our conflict is. I would come home when we were first married, and Elisa would say this. She'd be sitting there, and we'd only been married about, I don't know, 4 or 5 months, maybe for the first time, when I'd come home, and I could tell something was messed up. And I'm like, I'm pretty good at this. I know something's wrong. And I would say this, Lisa, what's wrong? And she would just sit there and just not really say much.
Nothing. I'm fine.
Yeah, she's fine. She was kind of a runner and she ran away from problems. How many of all y'all, don't raise your hand, but I'm sure some of you are like Elisa. She just didn't want to talk about
it. Oh, I wanted to avoid conflict at all costs.
Are some of you are conflict avoiders?
Yes.
I saw the little kind of this. You just bought a new car. Yeah. So she would run, and I'd say, Lisa, are you okay? And by the way, I knew something was messed up because at night we'd be lying there, and she'd be quiet. And I said, Lisa, is everything okay? She'd be crying. And I knew something was wrong, and I saw this liquid coming out of her eyes. And I'd look over, and I said, is there something wrong? You're crying. What's wrong? You know how long it took before she finally spoke? Conflict avoiders like her, amazing. 2 hours. I sat there and just said, it's okay, man. It's all right. Tell me what's going on, kid. I know I did something wrong, by the way. I know it was me. I just don't know what it was. I'm like, just say what I did, man. It's okay. What I do, just say it. I'll be good. You'll be good. Just tell me what I did, and then tell them what you said. Or you want me to?
No. Well, the situation, we were newly married. And again, we had lived apart and been long distance from the day we met till the day we got married. So we were still just learning each other and discovering each other and getting to know each other. And I had this great ideal that he would go to school all day, and I had taken time off from school because I just wanted to be a wife. I wanted to be with him and take care of him and make our home. And I was just excited to be together. And so when he would come home at the end of his busy day of working and going to grad school, I was so excited. And I'd meet him at the door and he'd be like, tell me about your day. How was your day? What did you do? Where did you go? Who did you talk to? And he was just like, whoa, 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 whoa. Totally beat from the day. And all he wanted to do was go back in the bedroom, shut the door, and have a little peace for a few minutes. But for me, that's not what I read. What I was reading is, where are you going? Why don't you want to be with me? Why don't you want to talk with me? Maybe you don't like me. Ugh. Maybe you think you made a mistake and married the wrong person. Maybe you don't really want to be married to me. I was all of 22 years old. I was in a town. I didn't know anybody. I had moved to Colorado to be with him. We didn't have a church home yet where I had community to support me. I was floundering and I was scared. I was really scared.
She finally, after 2 hours, said those words. Maybe not like that, but she said them. And I went, oh, dude, I am so sorry. I messed up bad. I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. I just thinking to myself, students, all day things, I just went home and I just needed like a half an hour to see how the Dodgers did or the Broncos and just let me just sit there and... And I went, Lisa, that's wrong, man. I shouldn't do that. I messed up. Forgive me. And so anyway, then, by the way, a couple of weeks later, same thing. Liquid coming out of the eyes. Lisa, what's wrong? And she got better. It took her like an hour and 57 minutes. And I'm like, you did it. You did it. So I messed up a lot, man. The next time was 3 weeks later. It took her an hour and 45 minutes. After 34 years, you know how long it takes her now? Like about 2 seconds. I'm like, what happened to the old days? Just give me some time, man. You just say, Chris, this is what you messed up. I'm like, oh. Okay. What's the problem? It's because there are deeper issues going on. When I came home, I was struggling. She felt these things. But you know what the word she never said? Chris, you know what I felt? What did you not ever say? There were causes of these things that went on in our relationship. And they were just, we just didn't have, you had real hurts.
Yeah,
right?
I think.
Expectations.
Well, that one was definitely the first one on that list. Unmet expectations. When we look at conflict, almost always the main result is because of unmet expectations. And the problem with expectations being unmet is that we usually don't even realize we have it, that expectation, until it goes unmet. Yeah. And then you're in the middle of the conflict, right? So as we look at other main causes of conflict, think about misunderstanding or bad communication, past hurts. Remember the filters and the scars we talked about last night? The traumas, the fears of about our future, anxiety. Sometimes it's our personality differences. We are just wired differently, right? I'm an introvert, or he's an introvert, I'm an extrovert. I like to go hang out with people, he wants to go hide in the bedroom. You know, that can cause real conflict in our relationship. There's also
that's messed
cultural.
Up. I come home, she goes, hey, let's go out. I'm like, hey, no, let's stay home.
And she's but like, we stayed home last night.
Oh, I got
night.
A bunch of people coming over for dinner. I go, oh, I'm sure you'll enjoy them. And she goes, what do you mean? I don't know. I think I'll kind of be out in the backyard splitting wood or something. We don't even have wood. But I would just make up anything just to get out of that. And she's like, and so we had all these kind of unmet expectations and conflicts. So here's the thing. When you manage and look at conflict, Lisa, this is some important things that we've learned. And so we're going to summarize it real quick.
Yeah, the first point is you really have to decide how important is this issue that you're having conflict over. You have to ask yourself, is this a hill I really want to die on? I can walk in the kitchen some days and I can tell you exactly what snack Chris has had because every cabinet door is open and the drawer is left open. I can see the cereal, I can see the bowls, and I can see the cereal cabinet. And I know he's sitting in there having Wheaties or something like that. And I used to stop and think, oh my gosh, how many times have I asked the man, please just close the door. Just push the door. How many times, Lord? Yeah. But then what happened is that I began to take a little mind shift and I began to think, you know what? I have a husband here at home with me. A lot of women don't. I have a husband that is faithful to me and is here with me and is here to open that cabinet door and go be sitting in there having his Wheaties. You know what? I'm actually really lucky. I'm really blessed. And so now I can go over and I can shut the cabinet door. I can push the drawer in because you know what? It's not that big a deal. In the whole scheme of life, is he a jerk? Is he unfaithful to me? No, he's actually a really great guy. I can put up with a cabinet door. So that is not a hill I'm going to die on.
I was so grateful that God talked to her that way. I'm like, God, you are really there. Thank you.
So there are some things you just need to decide. I'm just going to let that go. Because you know what? In the whole scheme of life, this person is really awesome.
By the way, here's miscommunication. I love this one. This is funny.
Das hier ist mein Sektor.
Das hier ist das wichtigste Gerät des Küstenwächters.
Das Gerät und das Gerät.
Überlebensradar.
Mayday, mayday. Hello, can you hear us? Can you hear us? Can you... Over. We are sinking. We are sinking.
Hello? This is the German Coast Guard.
We are sinking. We're sinking.
What are you thinking about?
Okay, come on. That's funny. That's funny. My little 7-year-old knows that's funny. She walks up and I said, Carol, I'm just thinking about something. She goes, what's you thinking about? You've been watching commercials, huh?
Yeah.
That's funny. What you thinking about? Okay, up to 70% of our communication, according to guys like us, psychologists, check that out. 70%, I can't even read that without my glasses. What's that say, Lisa? Of community may fall into the miscommunication category. Why? Oh, I could read it. Because there are 8 possible messages when 2 people talk. Ready? 8. Take a picture if you want. You don't have to. You're like, okay, don't take a picture, but listen. What does it say, Lise?
Number one is what you intend to say. Uh-huh. Number 2 is what you actually said.
Yeah.
Number 3 is what you think you said.
Yeah.
Number 4 is what the other person hears. Uh-huh. Number 5 is what the other person thinks he heard. Number 6 is what the other person actually says. And number 8 is what the other person actually thinks he said.
By the way, this is the simplified version of conversation. Is this like kind of sometimes in your marriage? I thought I said this. She says, Chris, we're going to remember dinner. when do you think I would agree to go to dinner with people? She goes, you did last week. I go, how did I do that? She goes, you were watching the Dodgers. And I said, you want to go to the game? I go, you're cheating, man. I'm watching. I'm so intent. You say, you want to go to dinner? I go, yeah, that sounds great. That's cheating. That's low blow, man. She said, Chris, you agreed, man. Mm-hmm. This is the simplified version. You want to check this out? Okay, here it is. I'm lying next to Lisa in bed one night. It's a hot summer night. And I say to Elisa, you're hot. You know what she says to me?
Scoot over.
It's a hot summer night in July. And I say, you're hot. And she says, scoot over. And I don't know what just happened. And I go, what did that mean? You see, because... oh, my goodness. Go back up there. You read it up there, Lisa. What I intended to say was, you're hot. I love you. That's what I intended to say. But what I actually said was, I love you. What I think I said was, I love you, you sexy thing. You're hot. That's what I thought I said. Make sense? Now, here's what Elisa said. Lisa, here's what?
You're hot.
That's what she heard. And then she says, she thinks she heard me complaining about her body temperature. She intends to say, you complain too much. What she actually says is scoot over. What she thinks she says is move to your side of the bed. Now, you see, what I think she said was, come get me, you sexy thing. By the way, let me just tell you, that's just two words. You're hot. Two words. Scoot over. Four words. Sometimes you ever just like an eyebrow raised? Like, what are you raising that eyebrow for? What the heck does that mean? Sorry, that was Christian... bad word. What does that mean with an eyebrow like that? I'm like, I don't know. I got big eyebrows. Can I tell a story? Please? One time I go like this. I said to my kids, I say, hey, y'all, come on over here. I got to show you something. I put up a brand new grill, a brand new barbecue grill. And I want to show you something. It's on their little play area in the pad. I said, you cannot play with this grill. Come here, boy. Girl, come over here. Look at this thing. Your daddy put this together all day, and it is not a toy. You don't push these buttons. You get it, and they're like, okay, daddy. They're 5 and 4. Don't you push none of these buttons. And they're like, okay, daddy. I said, come here, I want to show you something. I want to show you that when you push this button. For firefighters, this is a good story.
It's a good story.
And I go like this. Now, you come over here real close, and you just look at this grill, and I'm going to show you something. I'm going to light it for you. And so I had never lit this thing before. I've never had a gas grill. I turn the gas on. I'm going, you see this button? This turns the gas on. Listen. Psh. Yep. You hear that? Watch. One more time. Psh. And watch this button. It does it too. Psh. You don't touch that button. And they're like, okay, daddy. And this one. Psh. And now more gas is going. And that lid's shut. And I say, now I want you to lean in real closely. And look, I'm going to push this big red button real fast. And I want you to watch what happens when I push it. You don't do this. They go, okay, daddy. And I lift up that hood and I said, now look. And I push that button. And the fireball was nothing you guys have ever seen before. It was worse trauma than you've ever seen. It goes like this. And I go, and I see my kids and their eyelashes are smoking and their bangs are gone. And I go... And Elisa comes running, and she goes, what happened? And I go, oh, I don't know. And our boy goes, Mama, don't ever touch that button. You see, that's how you train kids. That's how you raise them. You don't just tell, you show them.
You're My never eyebrow- having us here for a parenting conference, are you?
My eyebrows used to be blonde. I'm telling you that. Okay, never mind. We are so messed up. Lisa, what do you do now? Married couples. When married couples argue about things like blowing your children up or doing things you shouldn't do or not talking, the leading researcher said 69% of the time, ready? It's a problem you cannot solve. Too many times we have people like y'all who come to us and say, please help us with our relationship. We say, all right, And too many times we've seen some of them who have left the relationship because they think, I've got too many problems, I'll go with somebody else. And guess what the leading marital research is going to say about how many perpetual problems that can't be solved you're going to have with that other marriage? 70%. They're not solvable. Because we're different. I will never want to be with people, except you, when I'm hurt and bleeding. No, not really. I won't want to be with people if I can help it. I'm not that much of an introvert. But she's never going to change. Do you think I should make her become an introvert because we got married? Yes. The answer is yes. Should she become more like me? Yes. The answer is no. Because we're different. It's perpetual. Will we always argue about this? Yeah. She likes clean things. I don't even notice the Wheaties laying around the milk. I'm like, what's wrong with this milk? She's gone for a week. I'm like, what happened to this place? Why is the milk curdling? I call her up. Chris, did you put it back in the fridge? No. It doesn't. Put it back. Will she ever be different? No. It's perpetual. But there's hope. That doesn't mean that you have to have conflict that ruins it. Because you can do it. And the events, issues, least, and we're going to end very quickly because Jason is going like that.
Well, when we talk about events and issues, what happens with conflict is the event is the issue that we're arguing about. It's the circumstance like the kids. It's a circumstance like your in-laws or sex or money or coming home late or coming in and going in the bedroom shutting the door instead of hugging you. Those are the things, the events that you argue about. But what we want you to understand is that usually what's underlying that is that there's an emotional hot button, that unmet expectation that's being poked at. It's the real cause of the conflict. It's not the money. It's not the in-laws. It's not the kids. It's the underlying emotional hot button that's getting pushed for you. And if you can learn to identify it and recognize it at the start and the beginning of the conflict, then it will help mitigate and get you at a place where you know your hot buttons, you know the other person's hot buttons. You're more compassionate about them because you understand them, and then you're much more willing to compromise to solve the issue. But too many people want to jump to the solving the issue solving the event without understanding the underlying issues, which if you can do that, you gain the intimacy and the inside backstory on each other, which draws you closer together. Because you have that deeper understanding about yourself and about each other.
Whew, you're hot.
Scoot over.
Scoot over. Okay, get over. That was really good. Wow, I like that. We're going to just move on. Hey, yeah, no worries. No, I messed it up. I can't even see that. What were the events? Oh, yeah, forget it. Here are the events. How many argue about being late? Can I see your hands sometimes? If you argue about being late, one of you.
Non-time.
Let me see your hands. Mm-hmm. You're married to somebody who always wants to be... who always wants to be on
What's
time
up, and you baby married the over opposite here has a person. Problem.
How many marry somebody who uses their technology so much you're like, please turn that thing off? You guys, see?
Yeah.
How many of y'all argue about in-laws, like family and like spending time with them? I've never seen hands go so high. All right. Here's what's happening. You guys argue about being late, you argue about, you know, coming home and avoiding things or leaving. What's really happening is the deeper issue is Elisa was deep down feeling unloved. She was feeling not respected, but mostly she felt abandoned. And she also felt, well, you tell them. I mean,
I felt insecure.
And like, insecure.
Oh,
and
gosh, she doesn't want to be married to me.
Yeah. And she never said those words. She just said, but I want you to be out with me and talk with me and hang out with me and just be here. But she never said, Chris, I just feel insecure. But when we learn that, and she said that to me, I went, wait. What I'm doing makes you, I don't want that. I don't want that at all. That's messed up. If you're using technology, another person feels ignored. That's what they're feeling sometimes, or not heard, or abandoned, or hurt.
Unimportant.
Or not important.
Ignored.
And you have to learn to use this language. Are y'all following? Is this okay? You come home, use this language. Don't argue about the event. Argue. Don't argue about anything. But when you do argue, do it in a way that says, honey, can I just tell you something deep down? You know what I'm feeling? This is what I'm feeling. At least tell them.
Yeah, to put the next slide. These are some very common emotional buttons that can be pushed for us. So just if you would, I'd love for you to take your camera out right now, take your phone out right now and take a picture of these, because this is going to be your go-to in the conflict to start identifying your own emotional hot buttons so that you can communicate them to the other person. And this doesn't just work for marriage. The great thing is this is so transferable because this works with your kids. When you have to tell your kids over and over and over, go do your chore. I asked you to empty the dishwasher and then make your bed. Here it is 2 days later and you never did it. Can I just tell you that when I ask you to do that chore and you don't do it, as a parent, it really makes me feel ignored. Makes me feel kind of disrespected, and I know you don't mean to, but I just need you to know that's how it makes me feel as a parent. Wow, that's going to be great information for your kid because they think, I just got out of doing the dishes. That's awesome. She never noticed. But you're going to use it. You can use it at work with your coworkers. Yeah. So this is it's very foundational and very transferable. So if you can get to the point where you can decide what's going on in my heart, why is this making me angry? Why is this ticking me off so bad? Ah, it's because I feel powerless. When you tell me what to do, you think you're being helpful, but I'm interpreting it as I'm being controlled and I don't like that.
No, she doesn't like that.
That's my emotional hotbed. You're not, trying to control me. You're not,
not
the boss.
Do not control
of me.
Her.
Yeah.
I'm just going to warn you. I tried like way too many times.
It wasn't a pretty picture.
One time we were at a restaurant. We were first married. We weren't even married.
Oh.
You.
You tell it right.
I will. We weren't even married. We were sitting there engaged and I go like this. I'm sitting at a dinner just right, and I put my finger in the glass and I go flip like that. I know.
Yeah, see?
And she goes like this. She's from Texas, by the way. West Texas. I learned quickly, you don't mess with West Texas women. But I did not know that at that time. I went like this. She goes, I would not do that if I were you. And she's smiling. I'm like, oh, what are you going to do? You're just a little old thing. And I go, she goes, I just wouldn't do that if I were you. And I go like this. Fling. A second time, she goes, what did you say? I'm just going to tell you, man.
I don't get mad.
I don't.
I
no,
don't.
She goes, yeah,
get
she
even.
Just said, I just wouldn't do it.
I get ahead.
So I go like this, what's that mean? So I made the ultimate mistake of doing it a third time. I will never do that again. I go like this, pling, and immediately her glass of water goes, boom, all over me. No, stop it. Hey,
there was
edit that out. Jay,
seriously.
Cut that. There are no applause. She drenched me. And I'm like, what is this compared to this?
It's like, I told you. You didn't listen.
She's like, I don't get mad. I don't get ahead. I don't get even. I get ahead. I've done it before. I just went like one time. She goes, and I go, like that. Whatever. We're out of time. No, we're not. We got time, Lisa. So don't look at these people. Here it goes. Look, you have to manage and define these issues because our voices, our words, our actions say things like, I like you or I don't like you, right?
Mm-hmm. That's a great principle. It's called an emotional subtext.
Yeah.
Every single interaction you have with someone else conveys the information of either I like you or I don't like you.
Yeah.
Every interaction, no matter how trivial or how big. And so there's a lot to that as we communicate. So that's why it's so important to define these hidden issues that are driving that conflict.
Yeah. And then finally, I think when we get to point three, it just says to take responsibility for your actions and what's your contribution. So I learned I was doing this. I just did not want to hurt Elisa the way she was feeling. Like, why would I want to control her? That's not at all, but that's the message I'm giving to her. What am I doing? What does this mean? Why am I feeling this? And I should just say, Lord, search me, O Lord. And where's that verse at? Search me, O Lord, and know my heart. Try me and know her anxious thoughts. Yeah, that's what it says. try me and know her anxious thoughts and see if there's hurtful ways in her and lead her in the everlasting way. I'm telling you, it's in the Psalms. Just go read it.
Yeah.
Okay.
But that's such an important point.
I'm sorry. Yeah, it's more important. I shouldn't
joke. You're fine. It was such an important point because being able to take responsibility for your part, no matter how small it might be, maybe the other person is 90% wrong and you're only 10% responsible. If you can be willing to just eat crow and say, you know what, I could have said that better. I probably could have done a little bit better. I probably could have approached that or brought that up or done something differently in a little bit better way, and that's my responsibility. If you can take responsibility for your part of it, then it helps the other person not be so defensive, and they are willing to own their part of it. But it really takes both of you doing it. If one of you is taking all the responsibility and the other one never does, that's unfair, and it's also unrealistic. We all bear some part of the responsibility to a degree. And so if you can just own your part of it. When he was able to say, Lise, when I told him, when you go in the bedroom and you come home and you don't say hi and you don't hug me, that really hurts my feelings. Mm-hmm. And then when I was able to finally say, it scares me because it makes me insecure. I feel insecure. I feel like you don't want to be married to me. First thing he said was, you know what? I knew right when I did it, I saw the look on your face and I knew that I had messed up. And I'm sorry. I shouldn't have done that. And then so he took responsibility, and I was able to say, you know what? It's probably an unrealistic expectation. I know you have a long day at work and at school, and you just give, and you need some time too. And that's okay. I want to be able to give you space to recover at the end of the day. So you come in and take some time. So we both were able to own our parts in it, and we were both able to contribute to resolving it. And so once we knew that underlying issue, it made it so much easier and so much fun. So then when he came home, I wanted to create a refuge for him. Instead of demanding that he be with me and share with him all the bad things that happened during the day and what the kids do and what's happening here and the bills that need to be paid and what broke in the house, I just want to come home and create a refuge for him. Mm. So I would have his Diet Coke sitting there by the bed. He loves macadamia nuts. So I picked up macadamia nuts and I have them sitting there beside the bed. He loved to read the newspaper. So I'd have it all folded nice and neat, have it there on the bed. And he would come home and he would give me a big hug, a big kiss, a big smooch for about 5 or 6 seconds. John Gottman, the leading marital researcher, says, when you come home, you hug and kiss and stand there for 5 full seconds, because then that sets the tone for the rest of the evening together.
Woo-hoo.
Right?
Oh,
so
sorry.
You do that, and then he could come home and I could let him go and be in his refuge for about 30 minutes and just gather himself. And then when he came out, he was much more able to be present for me. So it took that being able to manage the conflict by assessing how important is this event? Is it a hill I want to die on? Define those hidden issues, realize those emotional buttons that are driving the conflict, share them and talk about them. And then number three.
Yeah, we got it. I put up the next
verse.
You
want to pay attention to what is my contribution?
Yeah.
How can I help fix this?
Yeah. And then that's the what we're going to end on. Lord, search us. Know us, know our hearts. Test us, know our anxious thoughts. See if there be any hurtful way. And lead us in the everlasting. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen.